Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim Daf Yom. My name is Yitzchak Shalom. We're now in Masachet Bava Kama Daf Samach Aleph Amud Bet, at the end of the fourth Mishnah of the sixth Perek, and then we will do the fifth and the sixth Mishnah, completing our study of Perek Shishi, Perek HaKones. Hamadlik B'toch Shelo. The rest of this Perek is devoted, as we have so far, in Mishnah Dalet, been devoted to analyzing Nizkei Esh. Hamadlik b'toch shelo. Someone lights a fire in his own property. Ad kama tavor hadleika. How far does the fire have to go before we would say he's patur? In other words, what's the range of area that he has permission to light a fire in, such that if it stays within that range, he is liable if it does damage, but outside of that range is patur. So we give him basically a radius of a half beit kur in every direction. He puts it simply in the linear measurement of 16 amot, which we saw in the Gemara's take on the previous part of the Mishnah. 16 amot, which is the width of Rishut Rabim. That's how much space you get. Rabbi Kiva Omer, 50 ama. You have much more space that you are responsible for. 50 amot in every direction. Shimon Omer, Shalem Shalem Avir Tabirai, quotes the Pasuk, HaKol Ufi Adlika, that there is no shear, that's what it sounds like, and that it's all based on the particular fire, the nature of the fire, the dry conditions, the wind, etc. V'leidlo Rishimon Shior B'dleika, but Rishimon doesn't accept that there's a shear. All the other Tanaim have a shear, although they disagree what it is. But V'atnan Lo Yimin Adam Tanur B'Tach HaBayit, the person's not allowed to set up a tanur, one of those big belly-type ovens, inside his house. Elim ken yesh al gabo gova dal amot. There has to be at least 4 amot of airspace above the top. Hayama mido baliyaf, who was in a loft. Ad sheitachtav maziva shlosha tefachim. There has to be at least a 3 tefach thick floor underneath it. Uva kira, if it's a kira, which is a stove, then tefach. The other one is an oven. Tefach. Good. Vimizik mishalei mashi yizik. Even though you're allowed to do that, you have to pay for damages. Now, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says the purpose of the shiurim is to say that if you have it less than that shiur, you're liable for damages, but that shiur is the amount that you're allowed to have and then not be liable. So Rabbi Shimon certainly accepts that fire has a standardized shiur and it's not based on the particular fire. That what Rabbi Shimon meant in the Mishnah was it's not that the nature of the fire with the conditions and everything else changes, but rather the height of the fire. So depending how high the fire is, I mean, you build a fire and if it's a very high fire, then you have to make sure there's clear area further from the fire before we can exempt you. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, Mar Shmuel, Halacha Kar B'Shimon, V'chein Rav Nachman, Mar Shmuel, Halacha Kar B'Shimon. So Shmuel, as reported by both of his main Talmidim, Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman, said that halacha is like Rav Shimon, and that we judge it based on the height of the fire. Okay, now, Mishnah Hey. Hamadlikat HaGadish, Vayubo Kelim V'dalku. This is the famous machloket we've seen since the first parak, between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim about Tomun Ba'esh. Person lights a pile of grain, and inside there were vessels, and they got burned up. Rabbi Yehuda says, Mishalim Mashu B'tocho. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to pay for the contents. All you pay for is the pile of grain. That's it. Now, we'll see that Chachamim don't limit it exactly. We'll see that even in the Mishnah. Now, Hayag di kafutlo vevet samuchlo v'nisrafimo. This we saw both in Gittin and earlier in the Masachet. If an animal was tied to the Gadish, or a slave was hanging around nearby and they got burned up, with the Gadish, then a Chayav, he's liable for that loss. Why? Because he's not going to be killed for the death of the Eved, because the Eved should have run away. And the animal who was tied there is now damaged. But Eved Kafutlo Gdis Samuchlo Mnisrafimo Patur. If the slave was tied down to it, and the Gemara elsewhere says this is talking about a case where he actually lit the body of the slave. So therefore, since he's going to be killed for that, Kamle Bidramine, he's Patur. And if the kid was, Samuchlo was nearby, the goat should have run away. And therefore, patur. Okay, umodim chachamim Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim agree with Rabbi Yehuda's position. Madlika tabira, if somebody burns down a big house or a castle or a fortress, shemeshalem kol ma'ashe b'tocha, he has to pay for all of what's inside, not just the structure. Shkenderach b'nei adam, laniach batim, because that's what people put in there. So now we get an understanding in Chachamim's opposition to liability for tamun. It's not because there's some sort of inherent exemption, an inherent oddness about having things buried, but since the typical case of Eish is in a field typically, what you see is what you get. There's a pile of stuff out there. If somebody buried inside their wheat pile, buried a shovel or something like that, there's no way that I can be liable for it, because if I set up a fire, so I knew, and we're going to get to this at the end of the next sugya, if I knew that there was a... I'm starting a fire, and the neighboring guy has a bunch of his wheat there. I know I'm taking a particular risk, and it's worth it for me for whatever the reason it is to have that risk, because I know I may have to pay him $1,000 for his wheat. But for him to bury a $5,000 tool inside, that I had no reason. Had I known it was there, I might have been more careful. So therefore, that I'm exempt for. Beautus says I'm chayiv nonetheless. But the Chachamim agree that if I end up burning a house down, so people generally keep things in their house, and therefore I'm liable for all the things in the house. We will see that it may not be all the things in the house. All right, Amrav Kahana. Machloket madlik b'toch shalom v'achav v'achla b'toch shachaver. The machloket of Yonah Chachamim is only if you lit a fire in your own yard and then it spread to the other guy's yard. Right, Rabbi Yonah says Yechayiv for Tamun. Aval v'madlik... But if you lit in the other fellow's property, you have to pay for everything. That's Rav Kahana. Now, Amarle Rav, Rava turned to him and said, so if that's the case, at the end of the Mishnah, where Chachamim acceded the point to Rabbi Yehuda, if you burn a house down, you have to pay for the contents, because people have things in their houses, they should have added to that line and said, instead of saying that line, they should have said, when do we disagree with you, Rabbi Yehuda, about Tamun? That's only if you lit in your own property and it spread. But if you lit in the other fellow's property, you have to pay for everything. And then we don't need to come onto a castle. It's even true about a field. So Rava says, it can't be the case that Rabbi Yehuda and Chacham are in total disagreement if you lit in the other fellow's field. But Tarte Pligi, Rava says there's a parallel double machloket. Pligi Malik B'toch Shalov, Halcha B'chla B'toch Shachavero, they disagree about what the ruling is if you light in your own field and it spreads to the other guys. That's one. Upligi Inami Madlik B'shal Chavero, they also disagree about what to do if you lit in the other fellow's field. You have to pay for everything, including a money pouch or whatever. Only things that people would normally bury near their wheat pile, and go on morigin, uchle bakar, like plows and things like that, saddles, etc. But if a person put his power tools out there, or a person put his radio equipment out there, that you wouldn't have to pay for according to Chachamim, because that's not what you customarily do. And that's why Chachamim in the end of the Mishnah say, we agree with you that if you burn down a house, you have to pay for kelim, because people generally keep kelim there. Which would mean if you had something in your house that nobody would expect to be in a house, you wouldn't have to pay according to Chachamim. Now, Tana Rabbanan. This brayta supports our analysis, Rava's analysis. As you'll see, although there'll be one kvetch where Rava will have to give a twist to it. Let's say somebody lights a pile of grain, and there were kelim in there that got burned. Rabbi Yehuda omer meshalim kol ma shehaya b'tocham, chum omer en meshalim ela gadish shel chitin o gadish shel sorin. Exactly like our Mishnah. Now, they add one thing. What do you do with the area inside the Gadish that there was no grain because there was a big plow sitting there? What you have to do is say you still have to pay not for the kelim themselves, but for that amount of tuah, because what you saw was a pile 10 feet high, 5 feet wide, and 5 feet deep of grain. And that's what you ended up burning down, so you're liable for that. The fact that inside of there... 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot was taken up by an expensive plow. You don't have to pay for the expensive plow, but you do have to pay for that space worth of tefuah. Now, b'medvar memurim, when is this true? B'madlik b'toch shalov achav b'toch shachavero. Again, when you lit in your own field and it spread. madlik b'toch shachavero, but if you lit in your in the fellow's the other fellow's thing, then in Rashi's gori stivrei hakol, everybody agrees, which is now not like Rava. Everybody agrees, Mishalim kol ma'ashe b'tocho. Everything that's in his property you have to pay. Now, Rava, like Rashi points out, Rava would have to explain that as meaning regular kelim. You wouldn't pay for unusual things. Now, continuing the Braita, Umod Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Mash'il makom l'chaviro. So A has a field, and he lends B a spot in its field, lagdish kadish. You could put your wheat there, your grain there. V'higdish ve'itmin. And he put the grain there, and he hid some kelim in there. And then A lit his own field. She'ein meshalem el adme gadish bilvad. But in the sense, he's also lighting in the field where the gadish is. He only has to pay for the gadish because I didn't lend you that spot to put kelim. I lent it to you for piling grain. You put kelim in there. I can't be responsible for that. I never accepted liability for that. And we're going to see that played out in a minute. Now, adding to that, lagdish chitin v'gadish sorin. And here there's a little bit of a difficulty with the Rishonim encounter. But if I gave you a spot to put wheat and instead you put barley, sorin v'gdish chitin, or vice versa, chitin v'chifan b'sorin, let's say I gave you the rights to put wheat, and you put wheat but covered it with barley, or sorin v'chifan b'chitin, or the opposite, you had barley and covered it with chitin, enom ha'shalim el adme sorin v'vayd, you always pay the value of barley, which is much less. Question is, of course, if I gave you the rights chitim, and you did put chitim and cover them with sorim, why should I only pay for sorim when I started the fire? Alright, so it could be that Rabbi Yonatan explains that this doesn't mean what you actually pay for the lost grain, but for the space that we talked about of the kelim, that you pay based on the cheaper amount, which is sorim. The other possibility is that if you gave me the rights to put chitim and you put sorim, I pay for sorim. If I gave you the rights to put sorim and you put chitin, you put wheat, I'm not going to pay for that because I only guarded my flame as per sorim, which means I wasn't so careful because I knew I wouldn't have to pay that much. Okay, and we're going to see that principle now play out. So now it's a side door sugya. We're going to come from another angle. Amar Rav Hanotein, Dinar Zahav Lisha. If a man gave a gold coin to a woman to watch, he said, be careful, it's silver. In other words, he misrepresented what it was, undervaluing. He zikato, if she damaged it, Mishalem Dinar Zahav, she has to pay for a gold coin. Shundam Arla, because his statement to her is, she says, I thought it was silver. He says, Maya Balach Kabe Dazakte, why'd you damage it at all? You had no reason to damage it no matter what it was. But Pasha Bo, but if she was negligent, Mishalem et Shalkesef, then she pays for a silver coin. Why? Da'am Rale, she says, Nitiruta Dachaspa Kabili Alai. I accepted a liability to watch silver. I put that level of guard, which means I'm not going to trouble myself so much if it's silver because maximum I'll have to pay for it. I didn't watch it as per gold, in which I would have watched it much more carefully. Now, that's our take on Rava's statement. Rav Mordechai the Ravashi, so he turned to Ravashi and said, Atun b'derava matnitula. You learned that principle from Rava's statement about the coins. Anan, we learned matnita pshitalan, we learned it from the Braita. Because in the Braita we just read, chitin v'chifan sorin, sorin v'chifan v'chitin, if I had wheat and covered it with barley, or barley covered it with wheat, and mishalim d'vein sorin v'vad, the guy only has to pay for barley. Why? Because he saw barley, that was what covered it. And therefore, of course, the case is only going to become a problem if it was really wheat but covered with barley. He'll say, my wheat was destroyed. He said, yeah, but I saw barley, which means I built the fire assuming it was barley. I watched assuming it was a silver coin. I accepted shmirah of barley. Same way, the woman could say, I didn't accept watching a gold coin. You thought it was silver. Okay, now Amar Rav. Rav said the following. Shamit milta l'Rabbi Yehuda. I heard a halacha based on or within the context of Rabbi Yehuda's position in our Mishnah about Tamun v'le'adana mahi, and I forgot what it was. That's what Rav said. Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel said, Veloya da Abba. Abba, remember, was Rav's proper name. Abba Richa. Veloya da Abba, my Shmuel. You don't remember what you heard? I could tell you. The Rabbi Yehuda Machai will niske tomun ve'esh. According to Rabbi Yehuda, asu takanat nigzal bi'isho. The halacha is that we have takanat nigzal relative to esh. What's takanat nigzal? If A steals from B, and now all of B's stuff is gone, or particular a subset of it is. There was no record. He didn't take a videotape of what's in his house. He could take a shvua. The nigzal could say, take a shvua and say, I had this much cash and I had this much jewels, and collect. That's takanat nigzal. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that if you start a fire, it's not just the exposed barley that we can all see how much it was, but stuff that was buried in there, and nobody knows what was buried in there, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Nizak can take a shvua about what was buried in there and collect based on that. Now, Boya Memar. So Memar then asked the follow-up question. Asuta kanat nigzal b'masur alo. A masur, an informer, is somebody who says, let's say to the Romans, say, that Jew is hiding gold over there. And so the Romans come, and now he would drag this masur to court, and he has to pay for the loss. Now this all depends on the following. I'll leave it among the Danin Dam Dinagarmi, the Sug of Dinagarmi, which we'll have later in the Gemara. We've already touched upon a couple times. Loti Bailach. If we don't accept the principle of Dinagarmi, which is a very close causation, like burning somebody else's shtar, that there's no liability for that, then there's no question. Why? The Masir Nami Lo Danina. We can't be Dana Amosar anyways, because he didn't directly take the guy's stuff, he just pointed it out to the Romans. Alakiti Boilach, according to who do we ask this question? Ali Bidaman Damar Dainin Din Degarmi, according to the opinion that says we do judge Dina Degarmi. Asu Takanat Nigzal Masur Mishtab of Shakil Alo. So, they wanted to know, do we have Takanat Nigzal with a Masur? Meaning, can I say, you know what, in my house I had 50 jewels and this and that, and the Moser told the Romans came and took it. I take a shvu and take it from the Moser or not? The answer was teiku. We don't know if the Takanat Nigzal was extended there. Now a story. Ahu gavra de batash b'chaspita de chavre. A guy came over to a safe of his friend, and he kicked it. Shadin benara. He ended up throwing it in the river, or it got kicked into the river. It's gone. We don't know what's in it. The owner said, you know, this is what I had in it, and that's what he owes me. This is not Dina Degarmi, he clearly owes it. Yati Ravashi Vakama'ayinba. Ravashi sat down and thought, and he wondered the following. In such a case, do we allow the Nizak to testify as to what was in there and collect? So somehow Ravacha Bre Derava either answered this or asked Ravashi. Lav hanu matnitin, isn't that the same as our Mishnah? No, no. Dim chacham Rabbi Yehuda madlik et habirush mishalim komash betocho. Shnei adam laniach batim. Chacham agree that if you burn down somebody's house, they can come and collect for the kelim in there. And of course, there's no videotape, there's no record, so they're going to testify what was in there, what was lost. So Amarle idika toin zuzi achinami. For sure, if the owner of the safe said that I had kach and kach coins in there, then of course he'd be able to collect it, just like our Mishnah. Hachamayaskin and the katoin marganita. In this case, he claimed that there was some jewels in there. In other words, the question is, mi manchi inshi marganita b'chaspata, do people put jewels in a kasefet? Olo, teku. So his question wasn't about the extension of Tanakh Kanat Nigzal, his question was a reality question. Do people generally put jewels in there or not? And therefore, can he testify to that? And the answer was teku. So now, Vyemer Lavashi, this is associated, toin kasa b'chaspa b'bira. Let's say his house burned down. And he said, I had a fancy silver cup in there. My. Can he testify and collect based on that? Amar le chazina. He said, it all depends. Let's take a look. E inish amidu. If the guy's very wealthy, di le kasa b'chaspa, and he has silver cups. Inami inshi mehemnehu. Or he's a trustworthy man. Demifka di inshi gabe. People entrust him with their things. The mishtaba b'shakil. He could take the shvu and take it. If not, he doesn't have the power to say, I had some extra fancy stuff. He's otherwise not a wealthy man, and he's not that super trustworthy. He can't take such an oath. He can only testify to things normal people normally have in their house. And then asked a side question, which is, Ma ben gazlan lechamsan. Gezel, we know, is theft. It's robbery. Hamas is a forced sale. So what's the difference between a gazlan and a chamsan? So Marley chamsan yoyiv dami, gazlan yoyiv dami. A chamsan pays for what he buys, and a gazlan doesn't pay. So Marley yoyiv dami, chamsan karit lei. If he pays, so why are you calling him a chamsan? He's just a buyer. V'yamar avuna taluah v'zovin zvine zvine. There's a sugi we had in Kiddushin, and a sugi that we're going to get to chiefly in Bava Batra. If you hang somebody up, let's say by his thumbs, and say, sell it, and the guy sells, then the sale is good. You might have forced him, but nonetheless, if he agreed to it, it's a sale. So, lokasha, hada marotsani, hada lo marotsani. If the guy says, I agree to the sale, even though it's under duress, then it's a valid sale. But if not, then it's not. And then he's a chamsan. Okay, so in other words, I steal something from you and throw the money at you, that's a chamsan. Now, the last Mishnah, very short piece here, and the only Mishnah mentioned anywhere in the corpus of the Mishnah of the Mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is the end here of the sixth parak. Getz hayotzei mitachat ha-patish. If a smith is working with his hammer and anvil and a spark shoots out vizik, chayav, he's liable. Gamal shayat ta'un pishtan v'avar b'shut ha-rabim. So let's say you have a camel that's laden down with the flax and walking, it's being walked through the public area. Nechaz pishtan l'toch ha-chanut. And he had so much flax that it spilled over and went into the window of a storekeeper. V'dalku b'nerosh ochen vani. And the flax, which is flammable, got lit on the lantern of the storekeeper. Burned down the shuk. The camel owner is liable because he should have kept made sure the flax didn't go into the store. But on the other end, if he put his candle outside, then the storekeeper is liable because she shouldn't put a lantern outside in an area where camels walk by with flammable loads. Now Rabbi Yehuda Omer ben Chanukah patur. Rabbi Yehuda says that if it was in Ner Chanukah, then he's exempt, and we'll see why. Ravina Mishmei Durava, Shmami Namidi Rabbi Yehuda, we can infer from Rabbi Yehuda, Ner Chanukah mitzvah l'nicha b'toch ha-sara. This is a discussion in Shabbat, in the second parak, whether there's a greater value to putting Ner Chanukah below 10 tvachim. So he says it must be that it is. Because if you think you can put it above 10 tvachim, Amar Yehuda Ner Chanukah patur, why is the guy exempt if it was Ner Chanukah? Leimale, the camel driver, could say to him, Avele l'anuche l'malami gamal v'rochvo, he should have put it higher than a camel and its load. So, elalav shvamina mitzvah nicha b'toch hasara. So you see, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is to have it below, and that's why this guy's off the hook. Amri in the Beit Midrash, they said, lo, liolame malacha filu malami asara. Really, Rabbi Yehuda could say, you could put it higher than 10. So, maya marti, boy lach lanuche l'malami gamal v'rochvo. Their claim is, you should have put it higher than a camel and its rider. Came with the mitzvah kasi, because we're dealing here with the mitzvah, kule halu atrucha rabbonan. Therefore, the Rabbanim didn't want to trouble him. In other words, we want you to do the mitzvah. And we're not going to make it hard for you and say you have to hang it so high that no camel is going to come by. On Chanukah, the camel driver should be more careful with where they go, especially if they have flammable loads. Amar Kahana, Darsh of Natan, Bar Manyume, Mishmei, the Rabbi Tanchum. We have the following halacha of Rabbi Tanchum. Ner Chanukah, Shinicha, Lamala, Miyasri, Mama, which is way high. We're talking about maybe 30, 40 feet high. If you put Ner Chanukah above there, Psula, it's invalid. Kesuka uchamavui, just like schach, and just like hechsher mavui, the lechi of a mavui, the core of a mavui has to be within 20 amot, and all three of them for a similar reason, because they have to be things that catch the eye and people are aware of, and are not out of sight. Hadran alach hakones. Baruch Hashem, yisher koach to all of the students. Together we have completed, Baruch Hashem, another chapter in Masechet Bava Kamma, sixth chapter. And we'll begin here at Yirtzeh Hashem in the next podcast with a very challenging and exciting and stimulating chapter of Merubah, the seventh chapter of Bava Kamma. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.